want to send a shout out to George and Bearnos by the Bridge for dropping off some pizza to the ESPN Louisville studios. It was fantastic, as it always is with Bearnos. Perfect before Louisville men's, women's basketball games, Louisville Soul Music Festival, Lynyrd Skynyrd this upcoming week. Yes, it's that good. It's Bearnos Pizza, and certainly it was today. Hit the spot. Thank you to my man George for hooking us up with some Bearnos Pizza. Always like when there's food in the office. Always like when there's Bearnos Pizza in the office as well. All right, we'll get a full-court press coming your way here in just a little bit, and we will certainly play a little sports or leisure today. Nick Valvano back in the fold. We'll have him doing the leisure and all of that stuff that you know and love, and you know how to do it. We will do sports or leisure coming up in the next segment or so. We played our top round top sign of the day, but we do have another one that we'll get into, hopefully before the show is over, that we can talk about. And we spent the first 30 minutes, in case you're just joining us, we spent the first 30 minutes of the show talking about basketball, talking about what Louisville looked like last night, and about, you know, what the sort of view would be from a bigger picture perspective in the longer term, as opposed to just simply the game last night. Like, two different ways of viewing it, whereas my view last night is much more critical on the specific game, as opposed to my view less critical of the program and the bigger picture sort of moving forward. Like, I think those are two different ways of viewing it. The micro of, hey, here are the issues and concerns of what you saw last night and problems that would keep this team out of making the NCAA tournament. And here's the macro of, yeah, but this is a year in which you're just simply trying to build the foundation to put things together to get past from a year ago when it was a group of players that anything that did not go their way was essentially, you know, used as an excuse of, well, yeah, but we've been through a lot. And so the excuse was there, and they grasped and they held on to it time and time again. And it ain't easy to move past that and get a different culture mentality growing. And Chris Mack is trying to fight against that. He's been in charge since April. That's it. So last night you saw a little bit of that from a year ago, and it's going to take a while, but this is a foundational year. Doesn't mean they can't make the NCAA tournament. What I saw last night, I wouldn't guess they would. But again, this is one of those to where in 2 years, this sophomore class and next year's recruiting class will, I would expect, make up the bulk or be the makeup of a team that would be in the NCAA tournament and competing, and maybe, you know, next year as well. Maybe this year. We'll see. A lot of improving yet to happen. All right, it's a full court press on a Friday edition, bouncing around the country a couple of minutes at a time. And we head to Syracuse, where we don't find caller Kyle, who was just there earlier about 30 minutes ago talking about his trip to Syracuse and Vince Tyre on the plane with them and coach and all of that stuff. It is Stephen Bailey of the Post Standard and Syracuse.com. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you joining us. I guess, first of all, before we get into this particular team and this game, I'm wondering if there was a reaction from the Syracuse fan base or media covering it to NC State's loss last night that sort of moves NC State out of the way in terms of making a New Year's Six Bowl.
Well, it's interesting because I think there's two different ways to look at it, because, you know, Syracuse beat NC State, so you're looking at Syracuse's resume, and you compare them to the SEC schools, well, the NC State one doesn't look as good, but, right, obviously it helps you in comparison to NC State, and then when you look at the Camping World Bowl, which will be the first probably the first ACC Bowl after the New Year's Six, assuming Clemson doesn't lose and get bumped into an at-large bid, you know, does NC State become less appealing for that, and maybe does Syracuse get that bowl over one of the four Tier 1 bowls? So there's been a lot of conversation and a little bit of confusion.
Well, no doubt. I mean, if they win out, they'll be in the New Year's Six Bowl. I mean, I can't imagine a scenario to where if they beat Notre Dame and then beat Boston College on the road, both of those ranked teams, Notre Dame sitting right now in the playoff, that they would be on the outside looking in, or outside of, what, 12 or 13, or I guess maybe even outside of spot number 10. Let's ask it from this standpoint then, Stephen, as well. NC State was talking on Tuesday night and Wednesday leading into Wake Forest of, hey, just handle business, got to go out there and do what we got to do and win these games, and they're heavily favored and all the games left and every team they play is under 500 and they've got an easier road and all they do is go out and win the games. and then they had a 10-point lead and they lose to Wake Forest. I'm wondering if that sort of, from a Syracuse perspective, is maybe different than, hey, the college football playoff is a little more viable, or it's a, yeah, Louisville may not be any good and they're favored by 21, but NC State was favored by 17 and lost, and their season and their hopes of New Year's Six just went out the bowl, just went out the window, based on a team that they should have handled pretty easily.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's so much that NC State Wake Forest team is the last 4 years of getting stomped by Louisville.
That too?
I just think these guys really are not going to forget. I mean, Lamar Jackson running all over in the last 2 years. You know, the year before that, Eric Dungy was the starting quarterback for Syracuse. Was basically left in the game too late, took a hit to the head, and missed the rest of the year. And the year before that was probably the most embarrassing Syracuse game I've covered. You know, the offensive coordinator got demoted 2 days later. He ran an option pitch to the fullback in the end zone for a safety. You know, there was just like a comedy of errors. Starting quarterback broke his leg. Touchdown horn went off on like a drop touchdown. I mean, Louisville has really humiliated Syracuse for 4 years in a row, and I really just don't think Syracuse is gonna look past this moment, especially on senior night.
Has that been talked about with some of the players of thinking back to the previous years, those that are still on the team, of what has happened and how lopsided those scores have been against Louisville?
Yeah, absolutely. Those guys, I mean, those guys know how bad it's been, and it's really just, I mean, they, you know, they wanted to play better. It's nothing, you know, we don't like Louisville or anything like that. It's just like they basically kicked our butts for the last 4 years, and obviously Syracuse is an opportunity to do it. They're 21-point favorites. It's like the most, the largest projected margin of victory for Syracuse in a conference game in like 18 years. I mean, I think Syracuse is really going to try and put up a big number tonight.
And I think they're going to be able to, because Louisville hasn't given much in the way of defending many teams, or at least a speed bump at times. I don't know how this line, I've talked about it all week, so people that have listened are probably annoyed or you know, done with me saying it. I have no idea how this line is only 21, and now it moved down to 20. I think that might be the first half line, to be quite honest with you. But we'll see. Is Dino Babers a guy that, if he's got the opportunity, he'll put some more points on the board based on the previous years that he remembers of getting, you know, beat pretty good? Is he a guy like that, or is he a guy that's like, all right, the game's over, you know, we've got a decent margin, let's just get out of here and look forward to Notre Dame next week?
You know, my guess is he's going to let the guys play for a little bit. I mean, I think Petrino put it on him pretty good last year. I don't know if that's just the one factor involved, but I mean, also in regards to the college football playoff selection committee.
That's a good point.
Does beating a team 70-3 look better than 40-3? Probably. I mean, I don't know where you draw the line, but I mean, I think I would be surprised if Syracuse didn't, you know, keep pushing it at least for a while. I'm sure he'll sit the starters at a certain point, but you know, it 65-70 points wouldn't shock me. If they can do it.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't shock me as well. Dino Babers specifically, not necessarily his personality and if there's available points, just to go ahead and take him, but maybe just as a coach overall, that his tenure there in Syracuse, obviously a rebuilding program, and has put them in position to make the college football play, or excuse me, make the New Year's Six Bowl this year, is, I have to imagine he's... he's exceeded some of the expectations that were placed on him when he took the job. But I ask that as in, is there concern of other teams and other programs coming and calling that Dino Babers would be interested in taking those jobs? Or is there money available in Syracuse to try to lock him up and make sure he's taken care of there and stays with the Orange as long as possible?
Well, the difference between having money available and you know, having a school and a board of trustees that's willing to pay a football coach for the first time probably in school history are two different things. I think Dino is an appealing candidate. Obviously, it depends on what jobs come open and what he values and, you know, who brings him in. You know, I think he does like it in Syracuse, but it really will be interesting to see, you know, when, you know, if and when a bigger program comes calling. I really don't think he would make a lateral move just now that he's really got his guys in here and you know, he's learned the tendencies of the coaches in his conference. I think he's really got a good feel for what he's doing. So I don't think he'd make a lateral move. But if and when a bigger school does come calling, you know, what will Syracuse be willing to kind of cough up you know, maybe can you extend them earlier than that and, you know, potentially make the buyout a little less appealing, a little less manageable for those schools.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Campbell did that last, or Iowa State did that last year with Matt Campbell. His buyout, they extended him last year. His buyout's now $7 million. So if you're one of the big-time programs, maybe that doesn't deter you. But if you're a program that you would think on a different level than Iowa State, $7 million might be one of those to where, okay, we'll go to the next guy in line because I don't know that we want to pay $7 million. It might be worth it for Campbell the way that he's done it, and certainly might be worth it for Dino Babers because it's year number three for him. And, again, they're ranked number 13 in the college football playoff rankings. I think I know who wins, but I'll ask if you think this does turn out to be a laugher in the second half, that the 20 or 21 seems like easy money. Like, what do you think happens tonight?
Yeah, I think Syracuse pretty much scores at will. Louisville scores some points. I mean, there are some really, really good athletes. There are a couple guys at skill positions who Syracuse wanted. I mean, they wanted Des Fitzpatrick, and Hassan Hall was committed to Syracuse for a while before he flipped. So Louisville's got really good athletes, lots of speed. Syracuse's secondary is a little dinged up, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them break a few big plays. But, I really just think Dino's, at this point, got a pretty good feel for what Louisville's trying to do. And, that the offense has, I think, scored 40-plus in five or six games. I think Louisville is probably close to giving up just after last week, to be honest. So with all those things, I really don't see Syracuse not putting up at least 45, 50 points.
Real quick, before I let you go, obviously we would have to ask you about basketball. A top 25 team in Syracuse, they didn't get Baisley with his choice to now sign a New Balance internship. But what's the view? What are the expectations of the Syracuse team this year?
Yeah, so I don't actually cover the team, but I am somewhat familiar. Although it's kind of interesting, right? Usually around this time, people are asking about Syracuse basketball, and I suspect it's kind of different in Louisville, where usually there's still so much interest in football, it doesn't fully switch, and now there's so much more of that talk. But, I mean, it's an exciting team. It's the deepest team they've had in a while. I'm interested to see if Boeheim, uses that depth and actually goes 9 or 10 deep. He's often kind of kept it short, and part of that's been due to the scholarship limitations. But it's an exciting team. O'Shea Brissett can really score. Obviously, Tyus Battle. So mm-hmm. it's getting to be that time. But, you know, it's different this year with the football team actually really kind of being relevant and, you know, holding
right.
some interest into November.
Well, that's interesting. We went through that last week with Kentucky. It's like, hey, next week Kentucky plays Duke. Oh, by the way, they can win the SEC East this weekend, so let's talk football. No doubt about that.
Calipari will take that after the Duke game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Stephen Bailey, Post Standard, and also Syracuse.com. Stephen, great stuff, man. Very much appreciate the time today.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me on.
I've been to Pittsburgh.
To Pittsburgh we go. We find our man Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, how are you, sir?
Oh, doing well this afternoon. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Not as well as Pittsburgh Steelers fans are doing. That thing, I'm curious, did that come out of nowhere, or is that sort of the feeling that this Steelers team was starting to hit their stride and that was just them kind of showing it on national TV that they are turning into that team that's a contender in the AFC?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I mean, there's no question they've been playing better and better and better as the season has gone on. The defense especially has been improving at that kind of a rate. There's no doubt that they are hitting their stride right now. All that said, I don't think anybody expected what we saw against a pretty darn good Carolina Panthers team, or at least the team that I thought was a pretty darn good team. So I think it was probably a combination of the Panthers not playing their best, the Steelers playing as well as they've played all season. But I think if we want to talk about Pittsburgh as a Super Bowl contender again, last night kind of would have been the proof of that. Now I guess the question is, can they continue to stay healthy? One, because that's a big factor in their success right now. And can they continue to keep this up? Hopefully they haven't peaked too soon. Ben Roethlisberger talked about that a little bit last night, hoping that this wasn't a peak, hoping that they're sort of just hitting their stride. So any way you look at it, that was an impressive win last night. And I think even the most optimistic Steelers fans were probably a little bit surprised that it looked as easy as it did.
What's the difference in the defense? I know the last time we talked at the beginning of the year, I think this team was 2-1 at that point, right. and we were talking about Shazier and not being able to replace that, and the defense, you know, can they improve? In this winning streak, they've given up more than 20 points twice now in the last five games, but even last night's 21 came with McCaffrey late in the game getting a, you know, kind of a junk time touchdown. So what is the difference in what you've seen from this defense as to now it's putting the Steelers team in a position to where they can contend in the AFC?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, the front seven is playing as well as they've played in a long, long time, probably since the beginning of last year. And that was when Ryan Shazier was a healthy member of that defense. So, Stephon Tuitt has remained healthy. When he has been healthy in a black and gold uniform, he's been a difference maker. It's just been his inability to stay healthy. He has been healthy. He has been a difference maker. That allows Cameron Hayward to play at the level he's played at. And the front seven, you know, again, Bud Dupree may have had his best game in the NFL last night.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of shown flashes from time to time. Last night, he was a very, very active and almost an unblockable guy at times last night. And then you go to the secondary where Joe Hayden has also been healthy. When Joe Hayden is healthy, he looks a lot like the guy that was playing in Pro Bowls when he was in Cleveland. He was healthy at the beginning of last year. He was banged up at the end of last year and at the beginning of this year. So if Hayden can stay healthy, he's a major difference maker at the corner position. I think the safeties have really just been average, but when the front seven is as active as they've been, and they've been very good against the run game as well, this makes, you know, they all of a sudden are becoming not just an adequate defense, but a defense that has been difficult to play against.
I know sometimes, when things happen in a city or tragedies happen, I know we talked about this with the Boston Red Sox when the Boston Marathon bombing took place. You know, sometimes it can bring, you know, a team together or, you know, a city to sort of wrap their arms around a sports franchise or team that is kind of an outlet of some degree. I'm just wondering, is any of this at all sort of, you know, hey, now there's a bigger mission with the football team of let's not just go out and win because we can win. Let's focus and do a little bit more for the city because we can help the healing. Is that going on at all with the Steelers team that they feel like there's even more to play for now?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I don't know that you can dismiss that. I mean, you know, this is that was a devastating tragedy to the community, obviously. The Squirrel Hill area, you know, the neighborhood where that shooting took place, is an area where a lot of the players live right around that neighborhood. If they don't live in it, they live right around it. And there are a lot of bars and restaurants and bakeries and, you know, delis, diners. It's a very popular place for especially young people to go. So there's no question that a lot of those guys have spent some time in that neighborhood. And it truly is a neighborhood as well. So it's some place that you feel comfortable when you're there. So I think that unifying mentality probably is legitimate. Certainly the players spent a lot of time at hospitals and visiting folks who were involved in that tragedy. And I think when you do that kind of stuff, it's very difficult to not be touched by that and to not feel a bit of a greater sense of unity in the city that you play for and the name, you know, the name on the front of your jersey, like they say.
Yeah. The looming decision or the looming news and the personnel aspects, Le'Veon Bell expected to report. Is this a distraction? Stephen A. Smith this morning said Le'Veon Bell is a distraction to this football team. Will it be that? Is there a way that it can be a smooth transition for when he finally gets to camp and gets in shape and starts playing?
You know, assuming he does come in,
yeah.
I don't think it's been a distraction yet. I think it certainly could have been, but I think the players have gotten used to Le'Veon, you know, not being there. And it's certainly a lot easier to swallow when you look up and the guy who's replacing him is one of the top running backs in the NFL.
No doubt.
You know, those guys are very happy to talk about James Conner because he's there and he's performing at a high level. The trick to your question is what happens when he reports. You know, they'll probably put that two-week roster exemption on him, let himself, you know, play himself into football shape. You know, and then I guess the chips kind of fall where they may. I think you kind of cross your fingers and you hope that Bell doesn't let it or make it become a distraction. To me, the logical thing for him to do would be to keep his mouth shut and just do what the coaches ask him. That could help him make back some of the money he's lost.
True.
If he can show he can be a team guy. And quite frankly, it's going to be interesting because it's going to challenge some of the leaders on that team, especially some of those offensive linemen, to make sure they keep that locker room straight, because if he does come in and does cause a distraction, boy, it couldn't come at a worse time. This team is peaking right now and playing their best football. So I don't know the answer to that question. I guess is my long answer. It certainly could be a distraction. I think it's just going to be hard to believe that it won't be when you think about the egos on both sides of the equation there.
If you had to guess, what do you think the rotation would be when Le'Veon Bell reports and is ready to go? Is it still James Conner as a starter? Does Le'Veon Bell just get, you know, inserted back into the starting lineup? Is Le'Veon Bell, you know, taken over as the, you know, the Stephen Ridley, you know, coming in as and spelling James Conner? What do you think happens with this team? Because clearly Conner's the future. Le'Veon Bell is going to be a part of the team for a while, and then he's gone at the end of this year. How do the Steelers handle that in terms of playing time if you were guessing right now?
You know, it's a great question. I think that there's no way that he could unseat Conner right now. When you hear the offensive linemen, when you hear the quarterback, when you hear the wide receivers and the coaching staff talk about James Conner, I think it would be, you know, I think that would cause a major distraction, and that would cause almost a coup in the locker room if he took over. But the thing is, you know what Bell can do. They may have some packages where both can get on the field at the same time. That's a lot more easy for fans and media to talk about than it is for coaches to actually implement. But, you know, I think what happens is Bell comes in, there's no doubt he'll get his touches, and the hot hand will probably play. I think it'll probably be a rotation, you know, in an ideal world, and you cross your fingers and hope there's no injuries. If there is an injury, boy, you're talking about a couple of great insurance pieces in either Conner or Bell, whoever it is that gets the least amount of time.
No doubt about that. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Tony, great stuff, man. Very much appreciate the time today, bud.
Always enjoy it. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Tennessee.
To Knoxville we go. We find our man, Blake Topmeyer, Knoxville News Sentinel. Blake, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we certainly appreciate it. I'm curious of the view. I guess we'll get started with the view from the Tennessee side of this game for against UK, and a UK team coming off the Georgia loss. Not really sure, you know, where the head is for this this UK team. We'll find out. But how's this UT team sort of approaching this game?
Well, I think it's a really important game for Tennessee. I mean, you look at where they stand right now, 4-5 overall. They need to win two out of their last three to get to a bowl game, which I think would be seen as undeniable progress in year one under Jeremy Pruitt. I mean, I think the way this matchup shapes up, I'm sort of kind of expecting a low-scoring game. Obviously, Kentucky's had its struggles offensively the last few weeks, but I still think that defense is really good, and Tennessee's coming off a week where it scored just 14 points against Charlotte. So, you know, it has some problems on that side of the ball, particularly with its offensive line. So, yeah, I'm sort of expecting a low-scoring game, and I think one of the big questions for Tennessee is can they slow down Benny Snell?
So the 14 points against Charlotte, I'm just curious about that game. It was 14-3. What took place in that? Is just sort of sleepy and you're playing Charlotte in the middle of the SEC season, or something more concerning in that game?
Well, a little bit of both. The concerning part is I think Tennessee's got some real issues on its offensive line. Trey Smith, its starting left tackle, is out indefinitely, more than likely for at least the season. With blood clots in his lungs, he's been out the past two games, and so you take a starter away from an already shaky line, and that's a real problem that's not going to go away this season. And then beyond that, Tennessee got out to a 14-0 lead in the first quarter, and then after that, I just felt like kind of shut it down a little bit. A fairly conservative game plan, weren't having much success running the ball. And to Charlotte's credit, they got a pretty good run defense, and they were taking away a lot of the short stuff in the pass game that Tennessee had a lot of success with the week before against South Carolina. They really picked South Carolina apart with these passes within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage and kind of letting their wide receivers get yards after catch. Charlotte took that away. And so you take that short stuff away and combine that with an offensive line that's a little shaky. And that's a pretty good formula, I think, because your quarterback doesn't necessarily have a lot of time to look for those downfield passes.
Is there anything so far in the first year that you look at and go, yeah, that was Jeremy Pruitt as a rookie head coach? Like that sort of pops out that was a mistake, but he'll learn just as players learn.
I'm not sure that I would point to that necessarily. I would say that you know, maybe an area of concern here in year one is that, you know, Pruitt's calling card obviously is the defense. He'd been a successful defensive coordinator at three different schools, and the defense has not made a ton of strides from last year. I actually think probably the offense has made a little bit more strides from last season than the defense. Now, certainly not fair to evaluate someone fully until they start getting some of their players in there. But I would say that's one thing that kind of jumps out. I mean, they had a really nice win on the road at Auburn. And so that right now is kind of the defining point of this season. But still, they're at 4-5. They were at 4-5 at this juncture last year. And so I think kind of how this season is viewed really depends a lot on what happens these final three games. You know, can they get to a bowl game this year, or can they at least improve on last year's four-win season? Or, if they lose all three, I really think that's hard to claim progress.
We always look from a program standpoint, especially in looking at Kentucky with the SEC East, as to where they're sort of aligning and where they're fitting in. And certainly this year has been them taking a step forward. As far as the Tennessee program goes with Pruitt moving forward, are the pieces there? Is there a foundation to build on? I know a lot of the offensive skill players are younger guys, and Goran Tano's a sophomore, and a couple of the receivers are sophomores, and Tim Jordan's a sophomore. So they've got some guys in place, at least from the skill position players, that'll be around a little bit. But maybe overall as a program sort of foundation that this has some signs of moving in a positive direction, that they can get back to at least being one of the, two or three top teams in the East.
Certainly, I think offensively there's some thought there that this could be the beginning of some progress going forward. You mentioned Garantano. He's had a solid season. Not a great one, but he's been good enough to win. He's just a sophomore. Ty Chandler is probably one of their most explosive offensive players. One thing I didn't mention, that Charlotte game, he only took a couple snaps. He got banged up the week before, and so was really limited against Charlotte. I think that probably played into that, just scoring 14 points against them. But he's just a sophomore, so they'll have him back. And, the offensive line is a fairly young group as well. Defensively, they do have some veterans on that side of the ball, so they're not only going to have to get better there, they're going to have to reload. And so far, I would say the recruiting under Pruitt has been solid. Not overwhelming, but it's been solid. Of course, recruiting was never the problem for Butch Jones. It was what happened after those players got onto campus, and certainly some players, I think, were underdeveloped. But the recruiting looks promising. I think some of his staff hires have been promising, and I think the development of Jared Garantano certainly is a sign of hope going forward for Tennessee.
What do you think happens in the game tomorrow? Does Tennessee keep their 34 years in a row streak going, winning in Knoxville against Kentucky, or do the Cats break that along with the Florida streak they broke earlier this year?
Yeah, I think I like Kentucky. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think Tennessee is going to either need maybe a special teams touchdown like they had last week against Charlotte, or to really dominate the turnover battle to get an upset win in this. I think this is still a really solid Kentucky team. I mean, they were brought back to reality a little bit in that loss against Georgia, but I don't think there's any denying that Kentucky has a really good defense, and they have probably the best running back in the SEC. There are some weaknesses beyond that, but those two things you can really hang your hat on if you're Kentucky. And so I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think Kentucky's defense can pull it out. I would give you a score, probably 17-7 Kentucky.
This is, we just talked in Syracuse about the Syracuse fans focusing more on football longer than they typically would before moving to basketball. I'd have to imagine Tennessee fans would be the exact opposite, that they're moving to basketball, where typically they'd be focusing longer on football. This is a really good Tennessee team, top 10, top 5 in a lot of different rankings. I'm curious of just sort of the anticipation around there for this season, returning everybody, and so much love across the country for how good this Tennessee team is. Is this one of those where the anticipation is, do they finally get past that, regional, final, or regional even semifinal, make an Elite Eight and maybe even break through and get to a Final Four for the first time in school history?
You're absolutely right. There is a lot of excitement around the basketball program right now, and in a way that, as you said, kind of contrasts with normally goes on there in Kentucky. And I think, there has been some buzz about, is this a Final Four team? Last year was so interesting. They were kind of the underdogs. It was widely celebrated, the fact that they won the SEC. And then it was almost like when they got upset by Loyola in the NCAA tournament, they almost kind of got, I don't want to say a free pass, but the fans were quick to forgive them because it was such a successful season, and so little was expected of that team. This year, the script has kind of been flipped. There is a target on their back this year, And so I think the expectation is to not just get to the NCAA tournament and win a game this year, but to go pretty deep in the tournament. I think what will be defined as a success has changed in a year's time.
Yeah, no, I absolutely right. I'm looking forward to watching this Tennessee team a little bit more, and certainly we'll get an up-close view with them when they play Louisville coming up in a couple of weeks in the NIT tournament. And then, of course, playing Kentucky a couple times through the SEC regular season. Blake Topmeyer, almost called you Stephen Bailey. That is not you. He's in Syracuse. Blake Topmeyer, Knoxville News Sentinel, covers the Tennessee Vols. Blake, great stuff, man. Very much appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
All right, there's a full court press on ESPN 680 105.7 on this Friday edition of the show. We'll play a little Sports or Leisure when we come back on the other side, and Nick Valvano will be our guest, and we will let him do leisure. How long has it been since Nick and I have been hanging out for a leisure? Like 3 weeks?
This would have been the third week, so it's been about 2 weeks.
So it's only been 2 weeks?
Yep.
Because I was out 2 weeks ago, and then last week you were out, and Nick Valvano was out, and Produce, as Bobby V called him, had to fill in on that. So it'll be Nick Valvano joining us to do a little leisure. We'll tell you what the categories are, what we're playing for, the prizes, how to play, all of that stuff, and we'll do that when we come back. It is nice here in the studio. Not just nice in terms of nobody being around and just me being by myself, but it's nice in terms of the temperature as well. We've got the glass front studio. The normal air ducts can't get enough AC in the summertime and sometimes pump out too much heat in the wintertime. So we've got the Mitsubishi Mini Split from the DFH company, who we called to help us regulate the temperature here in the studio, so it's a little more comfortable, a little bit easier to host a show. So we certainly send a big thanks to the DFH company for helping us out with that. If you've got a sunroom, attic, tough room that is difficult to regulate the temperature, contact DFH about the Mini Split. Visit dfhcompany.com, or you can call 968-6222. That is 24-hour service, and that Mini Split will run a coolant line through the wall right into that AC unit. It is fantastic. Visit dfhcompany.com or call 968-6222. We will take a timeout, come back. Sports or leisure on the other side of the break. 267-9680 is the phone number. Load them up. We will get into a little sports or leisure next.
All the latest news from the people who are there. The Full Court Press on Kentuckiana's ESPN 680.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
Do you know what the future you is up to right now? It could be working for UPS. UPS is now hiring part-time package handlers in Louisville. For select shifts, you can now receive bonuses up to $250. They also graduate debt-free through the Metro College program. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com. Get there